Welcome to Redmond Radio, the weekly podcast updating you on the latest IT news to come out of Redmond. I'm your host, Michael Domingo, and I thank you for downloading and listening to this show. In this week's episode, attack of the zombie accounts, Dell sells software online, Microsoft settles state antitrust suit, spam continues its surge, and Microsoft Security Essentials beta comes out. We'll get to the big news releases from Redmond in just a second, right here on Redmond Radio. Welcome to Redmond Radio. I'm your host, Michael Domingo. And as always, I welcome your feedback on this show at mdomingo@1105media.com. That's M-D-O-M-I-N-G-O at 1105, M-E-D-I-A.com. You know, I'd certainly love to hear from you, so feel free to send me email or record a quick message or a shout-out at 949-265-1564 or the email I just mentioned. First, I'd like to thank all of you who filled out the survey last week for Redmond's salary survey that we're working on. Right now, I'm looking for a few people to interview based on the results. Those that get interviewed will get a sneak preview of those results, since I'll be asking you a few questions over the phone or via email about what you think of the numbers. If you're interested in giving your thoughts on the numbers, email is the preferred way. Once again, that's mdomingo@1105media.com. That's mdomingo@1105media.com. I do need you to contact me this week so we can line up interviews in the next few days, since I'm writing that story in the next week or so. All right, let's get the news. Last week, Virginia Governor Timothy Kaine announced that the state is partnering with Microsoft to offer free technology training and skill certification to residents of the Old Dominion. Through the company's Elevate America program, Microsoft will work with the Virginia Community College System to distribute 11,000 vouchers for technology training and certification. Microsoft is offering 5,000 vouchers for online training, 5,000 vouchers for online testing, and 1,250 vouchers for more advanced level training. Each training voucher can be used at a community college for either a free class to boost general computer skills or training on one of the programs in Microsoft Office Suite, such as PowerPoint, Excel, or Word. The VCCS will work with the Education Department and Virginia's Workforce Centers to distribute 1,500 training vouchers, 1,500 testing vouchers, and 400 advanced level vouchers. The VCCS will keep the remaining vouchers for distribution as needed on a first-come, first-served basis. Virginia is the second state to partner with Microsoft on Elevate America. Washington was the first. The goal of the initiative is to provide 1 million vouchers in the U.S. for Microsoft e-learning courses and some Microsoft certification exams at no or low cost to recipients. Back on June 11th, Mississippi announced that it was the latest state to settle its multi-million dollar antitrust lawsuit against Microsoft. According to information from the Mississippi Attorney General's office, the settlement is worth up to $100 million. The state will get $40 million of that in cash. Schools, businesses, and consumers will get vouchers valued at $12 or $5, depending on which products were purchased. Those vouchers can be applied for by those who purchased Windows 1.x through 3x, Windows 95, Windows 98, Windows ME, Word, Excel, Windows NT Workstation, and Windows XP. Those who bought in bulk will be able to use their software licensing agreements as proof for those vouchers. If all the vouchers are not redeemed, the state will receive an additional cash settlement of up to $8 million. Attorney General Jim Hood, who filed the original lawsuit on behalf of the state back in 2004, commented in a prepared statement that the money from the settlement will really help Mississippi in this economically challenged time. It seems Microsoft found a problem with Google App Sync for Microsoft Outlook, a new data synchronization plugin launched by Google a few weeks ago. Installing Google's Sync plugin will disable Windows Desktop Search for Outlook. As a consequence, users won't be able to search for data in any emails or calendar applications using Windows Desktop Search. But a Google spokesperson said that Outlook's search will still continue to work. Those who want to restore Windows Desktop Search functionality can do so by uninstalling Google App Sync for Microsoft Outlook. But those using an earlier version of it, version 1.0.22.1945 or lower, must first upgrade the Sync app and then uninstall it. Google describes this removal process in an FAQ on their website. Google Sync plugin alters a registry setting, which is the reason for the incompatibility with Windows Desktop Search. The registry setting change made by Google Sync plugin will also affect Microsoft Outlook Connector. This connector app is used to synchronize Windows Live Hotmail with Outlook. Users will know they have a potential problem with the Microsoft Outlook Connector because they will get an error message after installing Google's plugin. Microsoft and Google are collaborating on fixing the problem. Dell Computer announced late last week that it's the first company, aside from Microsoft, to offer Microsoft software for sale via direct download. U.S.-based customers visiting Dell's download store can purchase and download the Office Suites or individual Office applications. A quick check shows that pricing on Dell's sites ranges from slightly to substantially less than the pricing on Microsoft's own online store. For example, Office Home and Student 2007 Suite goes for $149.95. On Dell's site, it's just $80.99. Microsoft Office Standard sells for $399 on Microsoft's site. Dell offers it for $352. According to Dell, the company's online store averages approximately 10,000 visitors every week. Other software vendors offering their wares through Dell's online store include CA, McAfee, AVG, and Intuit. A few weeks ago, Microsoft declared its downgrade rights policies for Windows 7 purchasers when that operating system becomes generally available. Here's how it works. Windows 7 buyers will be able to downgrade to Windows Vista or Windows XP, but the rights to do that will depend on the edition of Windows 7 purchased, as well as the licensing type. Microsoft also set a timeline on how long the XP downgrade option will be available from OEMs. According to Microsoft, those buying the professional or ultimate editions of Windows 7 with new PCs from OEMs will have the option to downgrade to XP Professional only, provided that the PCs get purchased before April 22, 2011. A Microsoft spokesperson explained in an email last Wednesday that the XP downgrade option will be in effect for PCs that ship within 18 months following the general availability of Windows 7 or until the release of a Windows 7 service pack, whichever is sooner, and if a service pack is developed. Organizations buying after the 18-month period will not be able to downgrade from Windows 7 to XP. They will only be able to downgrade to Vista. It's not clear why Microsoft added the time restriction on downgrades to XP. In April, when the downgrade option went from Windows 7 to XP got wide discussion, a Microsoft spokesperson said that the ability to skip Windows editions in a downgrade was a long-standing tradition of Microsoft's end-user agreements. No time limit was mentioned. The rules are a little different for those buying Windows 7 through Microsoft's Windows Volume Licensing Program. If they pay extra for Microsoft's Software Assurance Program, they have full flexibility to upgrade or downgrade their PCs to older or newer versions of Windows, according to a Microsoft spokesperson. The ability to downgrade Windows is of particular importance to organizations that need to run older, so-called legacy applications. These organizations may use custom-built applications running on XP and may need more time before upgrading the OS, either for technical reasons, budgetary reasons, or both. Before we head to the break, one more news item from Microsoft. This week, Microsoft will roll out a public test version of its free consumer security application, which was previously known by its code name Moro. Microsoft is now replacing the Moro name, calling the new application Microsoft Security Essentials. A public beta is being rolled out this Tuesday, according to a Microsoft Security Essentials fact sheet. Various news outlets have been showing screenshots of a pre-beta version of Microsoft Security Essentials. Based on those screenshots, the installed for the program contains a Microsoft Genuine Advantage application that checks to see if the user is running a non-pirated copy of Windows. The check for genuine copies of Windows seems counter to Microsoft's initial stated purpose when it unveiled Moro. The company announced back in November that the new solution will address the growing need for a PC security solution tailored to the demands of emerging markets. Microsoft typically faces piracy issues in those very same emerging market countries, especially where the cost of Windows is unaffordable. Microsoft currently provides free monthly security patches, even to users of pirated Windows copies. But the company doesn't seem willing to let non-legitimate Windows users run Microsoft Security Essentials. Moro also was supposed to be a replacement for Microsoft's OneCare online security offering, which Microsoft plans to terminate. Retail sales of OneCare are scheduled to end on June 30th, but the service still may be available through other channels. A Microsoft spokesperson stated that the company has not made any announcements regarding the end of direct-to-consumer sales of OneCare or the subscription service. Microsoft Security Essentials will be designed to protect against rootkits, spywares, trojans, and viruses. It'll provide real-time protection and can validate threats in the wild in near real-time via a feature Microsoft calls Dynamic Signature Service. Certain actions will automatically trigger Microsoft's Dynamic Signature Service, such as downloads of malicious content, unexpected network connections, and attempts to modify the user's system. Microsoft recommends the removal of other antivirus and anti-spyware programs before installing Microsoft Security Essentials to avoid performance problems. We'll continue with more news in a second. Let's break for this message from 1105 Media and NetIQ. Check out this webcast. System Center Operations Manager users, get more value from your deployment. Watch this free on-demand web seminar and learn how to integrate, automate, and extend Microsoft Operations Manager to better align to operations processes. view it now at ad.vu/7D93. That's ad.vu/7D93. And welcome back to Redmond Radio. Let's finish off this podcast with a couple of surveys and some research notes. First, a recent survey from Curion Corporation reveals that a vast majority, 93%, of organizations are confident that terminated employees pose no security risk to their systems by virtue of legacy access. Unfortunately, the report notes, many of these same organizations have limited or no knowledge of the systems to which their active and terminated employees actually have access. Such unjustified confidence in system security leaves companies vulnerable to attacks such as the recent zombie account breach by the California Water Service Company, in which an ex-employee returned to his office after hours and successfully transferred $9 million to offshore bank accounts in Qatar using his old password to access privileged accounts. Corion, a provider of solutions to solve enterprises' identity and access management, asked 236 business managers around the world about their practices. Half of the companies had at least 10,000 employees. According to Corion, these figures suggest that IT administrators may be overconfident in their ability to prevent data breach threats from zombie accounts, which can cost organizations millions of dollars in damages and tarnish brand reputation. In the survey, Corion asked respondents if their top security concern came from external or internal threats. Less than half, at 46%, chose internal, which may explain why over half of IT managers are unaware of their employees' systems access rights, which Corion says causes a proliferation of zombie accounts, or accounts that remain active after employees leave a company. These administrators also are confident that such zombie accounts can't trigger a malicious attack or perpetrate a data leak. Corion notes that the CWSC incident is just one example of behavior that isn't registering with these security professionals. Companies aren't necessarily quick to turn off access from employees who leave the enterprise. Although more than a quarter notify IT to deprovision a terminated employee from all systems and applications, almost half, at 48%, take a day or more to do so. 4.5% can take more than a week before such notification is made. Once notified, over one-third of enterprises revoke access within an hour, but nearly a quarter, at 22%, can take more than a day. Worse, almost one out of every 10 companies report that they could never be completely certain that access to IT systems for terminated employees was removed. The survey also found out that nearly one in every three companies responding to the survey manually provisioned user accounts. Corion believes that this increases the likelihood of human error or delays when deprovisioning departing employees, and ultimately the risk of data theft via zombie accounts. Researchers at FinGen Software have discovered a professional network for buying and selling botnets. Although the selling of networks of infected computers for use by online criminals isn't new, the Golden Cache Network provides a comprehensive platform for buyers and sellers and a malicious toolkit for partners who want to profit by infecting more computers. The infected networks are being bought for prices ranging from $5 to $100 for 100 computers and resold, sometimes multiple times, at prices from $25 to $500 for 1,000 computers. The discovery was announced in the Cybercrime Intelligence Report from FinGen's Malicious Code Research Center. Although the proxy server for the system and many of the URLs it links to appear to be in Russia, the actual location of the platform isn't known, but it seems to be operating safely. The Golden Cache homepage says it offers a partner program in which it supplies an exploit toolkit with obfuscated code and the Trojan Zalupko. The partner is recruited to inject the malicious iframe into a legitimate website, directing unsuspecting visitors to a server that infects the PCs. The malicious code also uses the infected PCs to harvest FTP credentials for legitimate websites, giving Golden Cache access to more web servers to continue expanding. In related news, last month, according to Symantec Corporation's subsidiary, Message Labs, the spam tally surged, eclipsing 90% of all business email, which is an uptick of 5.1% in just 1 month. So what happened in May to encourage such an increase? Message Labs ascribes the surge to the persistence of botnets. More than half, 57.6%, of spam is generated by such networks, with the Roostock and Bagel botnets in particular accounting for more than one-fifth of all spam. Both networks are heavily based in the Americas. The single largest botnet, Donbot, is most active in Asia. The Americas, and the U.S. in particular, are disproportionately popular spam targets, and thanks to ever greater capture-cracking success, spammers have been able to more effectively exploit webmail services or social networking sites. A Message Labs release indicated that active profiles on social networks are gold mines for spammers to lure unsuspecting users. All spammers use is a subject line and a valid hyperlink to active profiles on one of a number of major social networking sites. These emails originate from legitimate addresses on some of the main web mail providers, making them harder to catch by regular anti-spam filters. The Spam Watcher also flagged the appearance of a new spin on the always intriguing ransom email exploit. In this case, Russian language ransom-style spam. What's intriguing, according to Message Labs, is that spammers are encoding English language words, phrases, or sentences in the Russian character set in order to fool spam filtering technologies. And here's one more study before we head on out. A new State of Discovery survey reveals a significant disconnect between information technology and business executives when it comes to disaster recovery preparedness. Although both groups of executives are in agreement about the importance of information availability, they are split about how to minimize downtime when an IT outage happens. Commissioned by SunGard Availability Services and performed by Harris Interactive, the survey found that 83% of IT decision makers of 220 qualified respondents and 78% of business decision makers acknowledge the importance of information availability to business success, while only 74% of IT executives and 49% of business executives say disaster recovery and business continuity are similarly important. The survey shows IT and business decision makers really want the same things, which is to avoid lost productivity and negative impact on customer satisfaction that can result from unplanned outages, said Patrick Doherty, Executive Vice President and Chief Marketing Officer at SunGard. Business executives' lack of understanding of the value of disaster recovery is manifested in project funding. IT decision makers were significantly more likely to say insufficient funding is among the biggest obstacles they face in developing an effective disaster recovery plan for their companies. That was at 42% for IT and 32% for business executives. Disaster planning is critical. 66% of IT executives reported decline in the amount of tolerable downtime over the last 2 years. Roughly half of IT decision makers say that this maximum downtime period is now 5 hours. A quarter of IT executives say they have inadequate resources to make effective disaster recovery plans, compared to only 11% of business executives. Likewise, IT executives agree that investing in disaster recovery and business continuity are more important in the current economy because their companies can't afford the risk of any unexpected downtime. And believe it or not, that is this week's episode of Redmond Radio. And as usual, before we go, I would really love to say thanks and once again to all you listeners who support Redmond Radio by streaming and downloading this program. I'd especially like to thank those who passed the show on to their colleagues. I'm Michael Domingo. I'll chat with you here next week, right here on Redmond Radio.